خلیج فارس و هرمون، سینه به سینه سلسله کوه البا، وسعت نام تو وسعت نام خورشید، جلوه خاک تو قرمز و سبز و سپید، نمانم من نمان منم من ذره خاک وطنم، من ذره خاک وطنم، من ایران خاک در ایران.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Middle East expert Razul Nafisi. His latest book is The Rise of the Pashtun, which is about the social, political, and economic roles of the guardians of the revolution in Iran. His new book out soon is The Cultures of the Middle East, and he's working on a major article for Foreign Policy on the clerical politics in Iran to be published shortly. Welcome to Background Briefing, Razul Nafisi.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And clearly this plot that was announced the other day by the Attorney General, Eric Holder, involving an Iranian used car salesman, in Iranian-American used car salesman down in Corpus Christi, Texas, supposedly involved with a hitman from the Mexican drug cartels in a plot to assassinate Saudi Arabian ambassador in Washington, D.C., has caused an enormous amount of consternation here in the United States and in the Middle East. At the same time, there's a lot of skepticism about it. So where do you come down?
I would say the case is not well built at all, and it doesn't pass muster, so to speak. And there are at least six flaws in the case. Each and every one of them can really put and create a huge amount of doubt about the case. I would say the United States administration is making too much out of this case and is undue and really exaggerated appreciation of what happened. And I have six reasons to back up what I'm saying about the case.
So, and these reasons are, just briefly?
The reasons are, all these reasons that I'm mentioning prove that this act is not characteristic of the Iranian acts of terrorism outside Iran. And if we agree that the Iranian regime is the master terrorist since its inception, then I would say it is very immature of the Iranian security forces to hatch such a immature plot. And the reasons are as such. Number one, the wrong proxy. Iranians don't use proxies except Lebanese and preferably Shiite Lebanese. And I would not use Mexican drug cartel knowing that they are infiltrated by FBI and full of informers. Number two is the choice of place, meaning the soil of the United States. Iranians know very well that any act of terrorism here could meet with tremendous retaliation by the United States, and there are people and forces and groups and lobbyists here who are looking for opportunity to target Iran or at least its nuclear technology. And perpetrating acts of terrorism in this country is stopped in 1980 by Iranians once they killed Tabatabai, dissenter, and for good reasons, because they are afraid of retaliation, simple like that. Number three is the choice of target. Why do you jeopardize your country, your nuclear technology, everything else, just to hit the Saudi Arabian ambassador? There are so many high-value targets in Washington that they could hit, and this would be really a very wrong choice of target. Number four is the perpetrators. Look, as you mentioned, it's just a broke used car salesman who had a number of arrests in his life, arrests for theft, for drug dealing, and a number of others, and how credible is his testimony that added to another testimony from a former trafficker. And then bear in mind that Arbab Sayyar did not even take Miranda. It just basically talked. And it seems to me that here we have a case that is very weak, and Iranian security forces would be very immature to take such an action, considering that they have been killing Americans in Iraq for years, and killing coalition forces in Afghanistan for years without leaving behind a. It convinces me that if they are master of terrorism, they would not commit such an act so imprudently.
Again, I'm speaking with Rasul Nafisi, who's the author of a book, The Rise of the Pashtun, which is about the social, political, and economic roles of the guardians of the revolution in Iran. And this plot is supposedly involves the Quds Force of the Revolutionary Guards Corps. And the head of the Quds Force, of course, has been sanctioned along with the alleged accomplice of the Iranian-American used car salesman arrested here in the United States. The assumptions are that, of course, that this would have been cleared by the supreme leader, because the head of the Quds Force reports directly to him. Now, when everybody says that this is, as you've said, this is immature, they're much more professional than this, what about the supreme leader himself? I mean, he's not a sophisticated man, nor was the Ayatollah Khamenei before him. Is it possible that he is just, you know, sufficiently, you know, living in his own world, that he's capable of coming up with something like this?
Here I have to disagree with you. Khamenei is very different from his predecessor Ayatollah Khomeini, who was just a simple traditional cleric. Khamenei raised inside the security forces and military forces. Remember, he was the informal deputy of Chamran, who was carrying out acts of surprise against the Iraqi military forces during the 8-year war. And Khamenei is well-versed and well-seasoned in military and security issues. And I even argue that he has more experience in the military than in seminary. And he is truly a commander of the IRGC and the Quds Force. And he has picked up every single leader inside the force. He knows them one by one because he worked with them throughout the Iran-Iraq war. And he is also, to some extent, a modern man compared to Ayatollah Khomeini. He uses technology, he uses internet, he is well-versed in Iranian literature and modern novels and so on and so forth. He's a very different man from Khomeini, and he certainly has a pretty good grasp of what's going on in the world. Now, if we disagree on that, that's fine, but I think that Khamenei knows what he's doing, although his general idea, his general strategy is wrong. But when it comes to tactics, he's pretty good. And by general strategy, I mean the way he looks at the world. The way he looks at the world is a black and white world where the perpetrators are the Western powers and the victims are Shiites. And either this is an ideology or the reality that he's living in, it is a exaggerated, wrong, and misled ideology. But when it comes to tactics, he has been proven to be absolutely a shrewd tactician. The way he removed all the reformists, all the rivals, and established the Quds Force and others in Iraq and Afghanistan and Lebanon, he has proven to be a very shrewd leader. So I imagine that if the Quds Force or Ayatollah Khomeini decided to perpetrate such an act on the U.S. soil, there must have been a sea change in Iranian security policy. There must be a great change that I have not detected while I'm an Iran watcher for 32 years, or if not more. And I imagine this is a case that would be very much like the case of French citizen Strauss-Kahn, already tried and convicted the perpetrator, but in reality we may come up with evidence that shows the case is very much groundless.
So again, I'm speaking with Rasul Nafisi, the author of The Rise of the Pasdaran, which is about the social, political, and economic roles of the guardians of the revolution in Iran. Now, your points are well taken that Ayatollah Khomeini was in many ways, I guess, primitive in a way, certainly had no worldly outlook. And the revolution began with a causus belli, which was attacking an embassy and holding 444 Americans hostage. This act, if it's true and if it were planned, was in fact causus belli, killing an ambassador in the United States. So when a revolution starts with an act of war, you have to sort of ask yourself, are these people, you know, reckless? Now, you've made a very strong case that his successor, the current Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei, is much more sophisticated. But there are these people out there, surely, in Quds and in IRGC, that are quite zealous and quite driven by the kind of black and white ideology that you're talking about.
There are, but in the meantime, there are professionals, and they have a lot of privileges inside the country, and now they are part of the elite. And if they are part of the elite, naturally they are corrupt. But to imagine that they would go ahead and do something like that on their own is pretty far-fetched. The only scenario that I can think of is somebody wanted to cause trouble and then go to the Supreme Leader or somebody and get some brownie point for, hitting the enemy or something. Or another scenario that I think is plausible and actually is better than the scenario that is portrayed by Eric Holder is that some elements of foreign countries in the form of spies and so forth inside Iran might have instigated the whole action to bring U.S. to attack Iran, and of course Saudi Arabia also would be affected, and Saudi Arabia also will get involved and provide the funds and so on and so forth. And that could be any of the number of nations who hate Iran, I mean Arabs largely, Israelis, or some groups with a huge amount of cash like Mujahideen-e-Khalq, the MEK. All of these people could have been on the other side of the line. The accusation made against Shakuri that nobody knows who that is. There is no record of him. Then Shakuri is connected to Quds Force. We have to take this, by a leap of faith because there is no. I haven't seen any evidence to that. Mm-hmm. I looked at the 18 pages that provided, and I haven't seen any evidence that how they know is part of the Quds Force. I heard from a colleague that she had heard from a FBI person that, yes, they have a certain amount of information that they could not publicize. And if they could, they would have been able to prove their case fair and square. But in the absence of that, in the absence of convincing information, I'll stick to my idea that this is a very weak case. It is really implausible to think that the Iranian government has been an international terrorist from the day of its inception to commit such an immature act. And at this particular time that Iran is so isolated, is suffering so much from internal matters, economy is so bad, unemployment is so bad, why would they invite an act of aggression from foreign countries or more economic sanctions? Why would they invite that?
Well, the answer answer is pretty straightforward. The answer is if they're in trouble domestically, there's nothing like a foreign aggression to take everybody's mind off and rally everybody around the flag. If it's a provocation to get the Americans and the Israelis and the Saudis into some kind of confrontation with Iran.
Well, this is often said that the Iran government is inviting foreign intervention. I, as one, have trouble believing it, because Iranian regime is very insecure internally, and they cannot count on the results of foreign aggression, whether a majority of people go to the side of aggressors or to their side.
Sure, that's a good point. Just in closing, I know that the regime is paranoid. The Nobel laureate Shirin Ebadi says that the Green Movement are the burning embers underneath the ashes. Obviously, they haven't extinguished the aspirations for freedom of the Iranian people, particularly the young. Their oil revenues are drying up because the Saudis are making deals, peeling off their customers, like their second biggest customer, India, because of banking sanctions, couldn't pay for its oil. The Saudis replaced 450,000 barrels a day that Iran was selling to India. And, of course, a lot of their nuclear scientists are being assassinated, presumably by the Israelis. So you can see from the point of view of the Quds and the leadership, they have to be a little paranoid, and they're losing their grip on Syria. They've lost Hamas, have moved it to the Egyptians away from the Syrians. And if they lose Syria, then Hezbollah is going to be isolated.
Absolutely. Iran internationally and internally is in trouble. Iranian regime, I mean. And they would be the last person to ask for more trouble. And a case like this is so weakly and immaturely put together that could be easily detected by a powerful organization like the FBI or the CIA. And they could find the origins of it. And Iran would have been in serious, dire trouble. Now, if somebody think that, or you mentioned that, actually, you think that Iran regime would be seeking trouble outside or from the outside to consolidate its hold over the country, I would say two facts goes against this. Number one, as I said, how do they know when they are in trouble, people go to which side? Number two, according to all accounts, Iran is developing its nuclear technology to the point that would be bomb ready. And now we know Khamenei deeply thinking that Iran with a bomb would be invincible. And he has even said that if Libya had kept its nuclear technology, would have been targeted so easily. So put this all together. Why Khamenei would invite an attack on his nuclear infrastructure while he is pushing for a nuclear-ready Iran? I mean, it's a very simple calculation. If Iran is going for nuclear technology in order to be bomb-ready or to make a bomb, then it would be very imprudent from Iran to engage and act like that. It would be very imprudent to invite foreign invaders. It would be very imprudent to expose itself to international pressure and coalition, possibly military coalition. So all of these put together convinces me that the idea is or the plot is not originated from the political structure or military structure of Iran. And some argue that some rogue nations may, or people or elements might have done it. Well, again, Khamenei has created a very central system and keeping control over all of these military and security forces. It is very hard to believe that they can go and carry out such an act on their own.
Well, I thank you I thank you for joining us here today, Raul Nafisi.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for talking to me.
Again, I've been speaking with Middle East expert Raul Nafisi. His latest book is The Rise of the Pashtuns, which is about the social, political, and economic roles of the Guardians of the Revolution in Iran. His new book out soon is The Cultures of the Middle East, and he's working on a major article for the Foreign Policy Journal on the clerical politics in Iran to be published shortly. And we're going to take a brief station break now. We'll be back talking about the latest country that the U.S. is going to war in. Siri,